Okay, we are live. Just going to check on the streams. Welcome, everybody. Today, it is Monday, May 31st, 2021. We are doing our best to survive the apocalypse, and I am very excited about today's interview. I have been talking about this incredible organization for some time now, and before I do that, I just want to make sure all of our tech is running. Yes, we are live on Rockfin. Shout out to Rockfin, and we'll double check how we doing. Over on Twitch, we are rocking on Twitch. We are rocking on DLive, and we are also live on, let's just see, we are live on the Foxhole. Hello to everybody. Welcome, welcome. So good to have you here. Okay. We are in a really, really crazy spot here in Canada. I don't know how things are going in your neck of the woods, wherever you're watching in the world. Please do let us know in the chat. Things are heating up. I'm seeing all kinds of news headlines coming out. There's protests going on. There's a battle of wills happening right now. And also, I'm very happy to report that I've been engaging with many people from, you know, the medical industry, you know, doctors, nurses, police officers, military, both in the US, Canada, UK. I'm getting communications from all over. And there seems to be something moving behind the scenes. Where there's a lot of people waking up. There's probably been a lot of people awake to what's happening. I think there's just been a lot of questions as to, you know, what can people in these positions do? And so I'm just trying to be here to be a voice, provide a platform, and get this information out. And I've been speaking about this amazing organization in Canada that's really one of a kind. It's called Police on Guard for Thee. And I'm going to pull up their website in a minute, but I've been talking about this for a bit. This is what needs to happen because when you put a flag in the ground and you put out a call, you provide a space for people that think they're alone in these fields to actually have a place to come to connect and to let their voices be heard so that they can stand for what they really believe in. I think a lot of people are in a position where their jobs are threatened, maybe even their lives are threatened, their reputations are threatened. There's disciplinary action that is being threatened. There's all kinds of stuff going on all these different fronts. And so we need to get this word out and try to get this dialogue going, especially between the people and the police, no matter where you are in the world. But I'm just happy to see this action starting in Canada, and I hope it inspires actions all across the planet. I'm going to pull up their website here. You can go check it out. It is policeonguard.ca. And let me just quickly read their mission statement so you know a little bit about who they are. Their mission statement is that as active and retired police officers, our mission is to honor our oath to uphold the Constitution of Canada and to the best of our abilities, preserve the peace, prevent offenses, and discharge other duties as a police officer faithfully, impartially, and according to law. To continue to serve and protect the public while remaining independent of political influence. To repair and regain public trust, which is being damaged and lost due to the enforcement of emergency measures. To encourage active duty members to join our court action requesting clarification on the validity of emergency measures being passed by our federal, provincial, and municipal governments. And we believe these measures are not only in conflict with our charter oath, but also place active duty police officers in an untenable position when directed by politicians and senior management to enforce these emergency members. And of course, if you are somebody, especially in Canada, who is in the police service, you can go to this website, policeonguard.ca. I have noticed that sometimes when I put it in the URL, it doesn't pull it up. So if you do, just throw it into Google. You'll see the website there. You can become a member. And I'm going to have my guest today, Rob, is going to come on. He's a spokesperson for this organization, and he's going to break down more. I'm so happy to have him here. So without further ado, let me go ahead and bring him on. Rob, there you are, my friend. Thank you so much for doing this. Shout out to the team, to Wendy, to everybody involved. I'm a huge supporter of what you guys are doing. And I'm here for you today. I want you to use this show as a platform to communicate the message that you're trying to put out there to the politicians, to the media, to the public, and to also fellow police officers. So Rob, please just do a quick introduction. Who are you? How are you involved with this organization? And then we'll get into some of those questions that I've got for you today.
Great. Well, listen, first of all, I want to say thank you very much for having us on your show. When I say us, I mean the organization, Police on Guard for Thee. It's been quite a pleasure. We've been asked to speak at everything from shows, smaller venues, larger venues, numerous talks. I've spoken in three different cities now, Toronto numerous times, Ottawa numerous times, and recently we've had a rally in Pembroke, Ontario. This is a small town, Ontario, and their rally was huge in comparison to how big the town is, so it was great. So thank you very much for having us on the show.
My pleasure.
Starting off, as I saw you introduced us, and you have a pretty good background of what our organization is about. I'm happy to talk about it a bit more, to drill down a little bit of how we can help people and how we can help active serving police officers as well. But yeah, go ahead. How can I help?
Well, I appreciate it. And first of all, I lived in Ontario for many years, in Toronto, Vaughan area. And, you know, I've got a lot of friends there. And Ontario seems to be kind of one of the ground zeros of some of the most intense policies that are going on in the country. Quebec would be another one that comes to mind. I'm in British Columbia right now. It's starting to kick it up a notch over here. It seems like they're trying to get some kind of a universal policy across the country. I just heard that the lockdowns have been extended in Ontario until December or something like this. And this is all happening around the time where you and I were just talking offline about how our vote in this country is being suspended due to the virus. And this is quite alarming. So I'm here just as a concerned citizen speaking to other concerned citizens. And I think a lot of people are just wondering, what would you say is the feedback that you're getting in this country right now from police officers? Has there been, as you've been doing all these talks and whatnot and getting this information out, and as this is all heating up, are there more joining the fight? Or do you feel like there's still a lot of work to be done?
You know what? It's a really good question. It's a multifaceted question, and it's going to have a multifaceted answer. So you did ask me a little bit about my background. I think this is probably a good time to talk a little bit about that to show you how it ties into the big picture. So I'm kind of an anomaly in the policing world, I guess, in a way, and in this organization. I was a police officer. I got hired at 23 years old. I was a police officer for 13 years here in the city of Ottawa. I was one of the youngest promoted sergeants in the service. And while I was in the service, I was very lucky. I got to do pretty much everything. I was everything from an underwater search and recovery diver. I was a traffic officer. I was an investigator numerous times, worked in many different sections, worked in some of the plainclothes sections. I worked in the neighborhood office dealing one-on-one with specific issues in the public. And I was even called on Parliament Hill to testify in Senate committees. I had a really cool, really, really good career. And I loved policing. I love the men and women that I used to work with. And it's such an honorable job. And I really believe that this is one of, like, having been there, this is one of the reasons why we refer to our police officers as our finest. They are genuinely our finest people. And now we find ourselves in an odd situation, a very unenviable situation, where those who are our finest, those are those community builders that we have, those people that we look up to keep us safe, our police officers, are now being tasked with doing things that is in breach of our supreme law of the land, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And this is creating a real rift between members of the public, members of the police, and even internally. There are police officers who are very much for the enforcement of these actions that they're being asked to enforce. And there are a lot of officers, such as the ones that started Police on Guard and were growing, who are saying, wait a second, whoa, this is in breach of what it is to be Canadian. This is in breach of the fabric of our society, of our democracy, of our right to travel, of our right of association. This is wrong. So when we first started out, because as you alluded to at the very beginning, we are an anomaly. We are one of the first organizations in the world like this. And we find that there are other countries who are having police officers organize and building similar types of organizations to stand up for their citizens as well as their police officers. So when I say we stand up for our citizens and police officers, let me tie that in. So as a police officer, you are expected to enforce the law. You're expected to be impartial. You're expected to be apolitical. And that is one of the reasons that in Canada, we have great respect for our police, because that's the way our police behave. In this case, in this situation right now, we have directives that are coming from above that are asking police officers to ticket people for gathering, ticket people from too many people are associating in one in one area. And they're using this under the guise of a pandemic. Well, Police on Guard is an organization itself. We don't get into this. We don't get into the medical stuff. That is not our forte. Although I will talk about some of that from my own point of view as a person, because I do pay attention to what's going on. The organization itself, Police on Guard, is apolitical. We do not get involved politically. We don't make political statements. Our purpose when it comes to education is about information and clarity. And if I was to sum everything up that we do, it's information and clarity. Information for the citizens, what your rights are, what you can and cannot do, and information for police who may not be aware of what they can and cannot do, or maybe need a refresher. So from that aspect, that is our information piece. The clarity piece deals with what does the law say, and let's clarify this. So as you may have heard, this has been the first time in history this has happened. A bunch of police officers, mostly serving, some retired, like myself, I'm no longer with the police, launched a lawsuit suing the government of Ontario, specifically the Premier of Ontario, Doug Ford. We're suing the Chief of Toronto, the Chief of Ottawa, the Chief of Niagara, the Chief of Peel, and a couple of other police chiefs who started out in basically telling their officers to enforce illegal laws. Now, what we have to understand for people that don't know the law is the Charter of Rights and Freedoms is our supreme law in Canada. That is our Constitution. And any law that offends the substance of the Constitution has been deemed by courts to be of no force in effect. It's a law that cannot be enforced. And
there's plenty, sorry to jump in there, Rob, but there's plenty of other precedents for that. Even the Emergencies Act, I think it was in the 70s or something, that was saying these emergency powers still do not supersede the Charter. Is that still clear, or is this kind of where it gets muddled with what these laws that they've been piling on are trying to tell officers to enforce?
You know, that's an interesting question. I don't have the answer for you specifically, because what you describe in the 70s occurred prior to the Charter of Rights and Freedoms in Canada. The Charter of Rights and Freedoms was enacted in 1982. So anything that happened in the 70s in regards to, I guess that would have been the Canadian Bill of Rights at the time, would have perhaps offended the Canadian Bill of Rights. But for most aspects, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms is pretty much based on the Canadian Bill of Rights. And your charter privileges and your charter rights, once again, are enshrined in our Constitution, and they cannot be violated. There are some caveats, or there are some exceptions, such as if you commit a crime and go to jail, well, then your right to freedom of mobility will be compromised. But that's right. after there's a hearing, and after, it's not arbitrary. There's a check and balance before the government does that to you, before the public itself does that to you. Because in Canada, our government is an extension of public will. The government can only do what we as the public collectively allow it to do. And when it supersedes its boundaries, when it supersedes the powers that we allow it to have, then we have problems. And that's where, these are why our rallies are growing. The public is not happy with what the government is doing. Now, remember, I'm saying we're apolitical. So we have a red government federally. We have a blue government provincially. So this is not about political lines. This is about the actions these governments are taking. And when I say provincially, I'm talking about the province of Ontario, because I'm in Ontario, but we do have obviously Police on Guard members in every province. So for me to speak about this, I'm going to be speaking specifically in Ontario, because that's what I'm most familiar with, and how this relates to Canada as Canada-wide, not into the individual provinces within Canada, if that helps.
Oh, absolutely. And that was a great explanation. I really appreciate that. And, I just want to note to all the police out there and yourself, Rob, like I personally have nothing but respect. I grew up wanting to be a police officer just because I understood the value of upholding upholding law, just law. And, excuse me. And so I support that action. I supported it during even the protests that were trying to say defund the police, we need to get rid of the police and downsize the police. I found that rather interesting that right before all this happened, that was a big movement happening, especially in the States. And I spoke out against that because I support the need for having a police service here. And now when I saw all this footage going around, like so many of police, going well beyond their charter, And, you know, I know there's individual cases and then there's, you know, so many different things that are involved in that, but it broke my heart. And I can see that in many of the police officers I've spoken to, they feel the same way. And I want people that are watching this to realize that this isn't just the people versus the police or the people versus the government. There's good people in the government. There's good people in the police that are trying to fight back as well. And that's why when I saw your website and I've been following you guys on Twitter and your movement, it was just such a breath of fresh air. So let's maybe, if you don't mind, we can get a little bit specific. And I just, even if you want to give your opinion on this, we got all these policies that have continued for what, I don't know, 15, 16 months now. I forget the date, honestly, where, you know, I'm a small business owner. My business was shut down. So many others have been shut down and even blockaded from even trying to have a business. Where do we stand when it comes to these mandates with the masking, with the, you know, we've got now this vaccine rollout. In terms of enforcement, it seems to be that there's this push for police, or not just police, but all these powers in government to force these things. And they're trying to say, oh, it's because of the virus and it's because of these health mandates and everything else. Does any of that, to your knowledge, have any real standing? Or is this something that really does need to be taken to the court level? And is that why you guys pursued this court action to bring it to a Supreme Court or a court that would hear it so that this debate could actually be had about these measures?
Once again, excellent question. And that's exactly why we brought this to court. And that's the clarity portion that we were speaking about earlier. We absolutely need some definition here, because what we're seeing is that police are being asked to do something that is in complete breach of our charter rights. And there seems to be, excuse me one second, I have asthma, so I do cough every once in a while.
It's not the Rona. It's not the Rona. We're good.
Yeah, it's asthma. And you know, it's actually getting better, so it's good. So in any case, one of the things that we're seeing is, one of the things that we're concerned about is the overreach of police powers, and not necessarily just by virtue of what's being asked of the police officers, but their civil and criminal liability, which they are exposed to by enforcing illegal laws. And let's take it a step further and talk about what's actually happening in the courts. So I spoke in Pembroke 2 days ago. Today's Monday. So on Saturday, I spoke in Pembroke to a small town group of people who are organizing, and they were very upset about what is happening. And one of the people that came was a gym owner in the city of Ottawa who came to Pembroke as well to speak about what happened with his business. And we'll get into this as well, but I'm also a business owner. That's actually why I left the police. I loved policing, but I also had this burning desire to get into business. And that's why, you know, I kind of bring a unique perspective, because I have both sides of the table from my own personal experiences. So this gym owner, he's been charged. What he basically said was he was very respectful when these lockdowns first happened. We listened to our politicians. We knew there wasn't a lot of information there. We were sympathetic to the cause. And just like Doug Ford told us, you know, this is an all hands on deck thing. This is something we all have to work together to get through. And in the first 2 weeks, he said, just a 2 week lockdown, it's all we need to beat this virus. Now, either he was deliberately misleading us, or he really didn't know what he was dealing with. In either case, we respected what the premier had to say. Then, as we know, the lockdowns continued, and then it was two more weeks, and then just a little bit more, and then more lockdowns. And then in October of last year, 2020, a document was released, or leaked, so to speak, from someone who was related to someone in the Prime Minister's caucus. I'm not sure if you're aware of the document I'm talking about.
I am, yes.
Okay. So this document, which was leaked in October, pretty much had a roadmap on how the coronavirus response is going to go. And the one void that was in that document was whether or not death rates go up or down. It didn't matter. This is what's going to happen. So a lot of people became suspicious and said, well, why are you progressing to, you know, shutting down interprovincial borders, which we saw many months later, which was in the plan, if there's no mention of cases going up or down? We've also learned from many doctors who are being silenced. They're being politically silenced. They're being, you know, there's political will being exercised over their regulating bodies, that if they speak out, they're subject to discipline. They're subject to losing their licenses or being terminated from the hospitals they work at, if they talk about what is really going on in hospitals. And for many people, I have friends that are doctors. My father was in the hospital recently. They're ghost towns. They're not full, like we're being led to believe in the media. They're not. Maybe there is a hospital here or there that may have an influx of patients. And we know, we know that because of so many surgeries being delayed, we know that so many treatments have been delayed. We know that many people are coming into these hospitals to catch up on those treatments. They're not necessarily coronavirus patients. I know myself, I had a conversation. So just so you know, like I said, Police on Guard is not a political organization, but I am very involved politically. I was very much, and I was very much in the camp of the Doug Ford government. I have learned that the Doug Ford government, right from the beginning, knew all too well that they were miscalculating and miscounting deaths from coronavirus. They were counting regular deaths in retirement homes as coronavirus. I know that from a conversation from a staffer. And in policing, we don't release our confidential informants, and I won't release this person's name either. But this person and I have had a very close relationship for many years. And I know that this person is a credible person. And I also know, because I have friends who work in the old age homes, and they were all pulled aside, we're going to label deaths as coronavirus. No autopsies, no follow-ups, no swabs, no tests, nothing. This is how we're going to label them. And so if you look at the statistics of mortality that are coming out now, Canada-wide, Ontario-wide, they're all hypothetical. They're all projected. But actual deaths for 2020, 2021 are not being reported. We have them up until August. What happened to September, October? So we have them up to end of September, October, November, December. Where are your stats? We know that if you look at what the information that is available, there has been no increase in deaths whatsoever. Zero. There's been zero. As a matter of fact, there's a decline in deaths in Canada since this coronavirus issue started happening.
Yeah, like the flu has vanished. It's really,
yeah,
really
exactly. Odd. A lot of other things have vanished. You know, and like I said, I'm here to speak on Police on Guard, so I'll keep it to that. But here's an interesting thing that does happen with Police on Guard. Pastor James Coates, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, if you saw this.
Yes.
What has happened with him in court recently. But all of his charges, except for one, were withdrawn by the Crown. Every single one. And so there's only one charge that he's facing, a provincial offense. His lawyers filed a charter motion saying, we want the provincial health doctor, the doctor of provincial health, to come to court, or at least provide us the scientific and medical evidence of why we're being locked down. And a year and 2 months into this pandemic, the government admitted that it cannot provide one shred of medical or scientific evidence to support the decision to lock everybody down. This is part of the reason they withdrew all the charges. And this is another. So what they did with that outstanding charge is they delayed it. They delayed it, asking for more time to provide the data. Because what's happening right now in the media is we're being told one side of the story. So if I was going to relate that side of the story to policing, imagine you've been charged with an offense and the only person who gets to speak is the prosecution. How many people are going to be found not guilty? Probably zero, because there's no counter evidence. There's no defense evidence that's allowed to come forward. And that's what's happening. This is the first time in medicine in Canada that doctors have not been able to publicly dialogue or debate or openly discuss what is happening, what treatment options we're pushing forward. And that's the same thing with Pastor James Coates. He's in court, and now the other side is allowed to speak. Now the defense is allowed to present a case, and the government's not prepared for it. And this is why, when I'm looking at the number of people, even in the States, getting vaccinated right now, like in Canada, I've had people wagging their fingers at me on Facebook and saying, you know, the only reason the United States is opening up right now is because 90% of the people have been vaccinated, thankfully, and that's why they can reopen. Well, not according to the CDC. The CDC's That's right. own website is showing right now that less than 41% of people are fully vaccinated. Yet, for months, the cases have been dropping. Although the number of people taking the shot is slowly rising, the cases were dropping a long time ago. And then you have Dr. Fauci saying, well, 90% of people need to be vaccinated for herd immunity. Well, we know that's not true. We can see the numbers. It's not true. So,
especially when we know that this shot, admitted in their own scientific literature from these manufacturers, it doesn't even prevent transmission. So if it doesn't prevent transmission, what the hell are we doing? And if the government of Canada can't even provide after all this time. So if you're listening in Canada, okay, and I'll bet you it's the same everywhere. The government can't go to court to prove their case. Is that what you're saying? So basically the justification to impose these laws, which contradict the Charter of Rights and Freedoms in this country, can't be justified scientifically. And when given the opportunity, the government takes a pass. Is that right?
So far, that's exactly what we've seen. We haven't seen, and as being a member of Police on Guard, I'm being sent stuff all the time. And, you know, some of it I have to be cautious about because I have to check everything before I say something.
Right.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, so I'm very conscientious that if I'm going to say something in public, that credibility is everything. And I took my credibility seriously as a police officer, and I'm taking my credibility seriously doing this role as well. I mean, credibility is something that stays with you. It's attached to your name. So I don't want to ruin that. And the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms was the organization that had put this out. They had described what was happening with Pastor James Coates. And if you research it, it's all there. The government is not providing, cannot provide scientific and medical evidence to back up what it's doing. So what do we as the public do? Do we just sit in our homes, allow our businesses to fail, allow our citizens to lose their houses? And there's another side to this as well. Let's bring in Nuremberg for a second. The Nuremberg laws are quite clear. You cannot conduct medical experiments on people without their full knowledge and consent on what they are being administered. And in this case, with doctors being silenced, with the inability for practitioners who are administering these chemicals, are people properly being informed? And if they're not, there's a breach right there. So how far is this going to go? Who's responsible for this? From a policing point of view, one of the things that we do in policing is investigate. So looking at the investigation, one has to wonder, why are both sides not being shown to people for them to make an informed decision?
Right.
And earlier, I want to say one other thing that's very pertinent to this discussion. Earlier when I was talking about myself and I said, I'm kind of an anomaly. The business that I'm in is advertising. I'm into digital advertising. I'm very good at what I do. And I have learned, and I've been doing this for many, many years. And part of advertising is psychology. So having read many books on psychology in terms of how it relates to advertising and compliance, basically, that's what advertising is. is a form of compliance. You're getting people to comply with you, but through their own will, through the techniques of advertising. I've noticed right from the beginning, and many of my colleagues in advertising have phoned me and said, Rob, are you noticing that this is not information for people about coronavirus? This is an advertising campaign to take a vaccine.
Thank you for saying that. That's exactly what I was thinking.
But it is. I'm telling you, I'm a professional advertiser. That's what I do. I mean, I have a few businesses, but one of them is professional advertising. And like I said, I'm very good at it. I'm not giving myself a personal plug here, but I just want to put in context how serious I am about the point I'm making. In advertising, if you're getting between 1-3% of advertising return, you have hit the advertising jackpot. That's a great ad for your advertising. I'm constantly hitting 6-7%. So I know exactly what I'm doing. I recognize advertising like anything I've ever done. I've done it to the nth degree. I've always, you know, researched everything to the nth degree and then implemented it. And that's what we're seeing here. If we were in such a deadly pandemic, if we're in such a deadly pandemic, would we be offering free tuition for people who take the shot? Would we be offering tickets to baseball games or hockey games or donuts or free food if this is what was happening? I mean, in a real pandemic, you're walking down the street and people are dropping dead. And What we know at this point from an investigative point of view is people have died and the reasons given to them have been coronavirus. But we also know, and this story really struck me, and I'm going to keep the location confidential, but someone came up to me, someone who I would sum up to be a very credible person, and said, you know, Rob, my uncle died. My uncle died, who was very healthy, active guy, older guy. I think I'm gonna guess they were in their 60s, late 60s, early 70s. healthy, healthy person, had the injection and died within days. And after they had the injection, they weren't feeling well, they were complaining, and they died. Now, the person telling me is not a doctor, but where the story goes is shocking. So the coroner came because the person died at home, and the family showed up, and the doctor started talking, and they said the family, this person asked the coroner, do you think this could have been from the shot? The doctor said, my personal belief is yes. My professional belief, I'm not writing that down. And that's where the conversation was left. That's a wow. huge. And you know, on one hand, I can fault the doctor. We can fault the doctor for saying this, the coroner for saying this. But on the other hand, at least that information got out. At least the coroner was honest with the person that asked the question, despite the fact that they didn't fill out the form the way they should have. But look at the pressure that's being put on them. If I sum this up, is it wiser or better to have someone on the inside who's actually giving us this information as opposed to someone who's saying nothing and not letting us know what the truth is? So I know, you know, we're supposed to be talking about police on guard stuff, and a lot of the stuff like coroners, deaths, investigations, that is to a degree related to policing stuff, but that's not really the purview of police on guard. Once again, it's education for the public, education for the police, and clarity in regards to filing this lawsuit that we filed, suing the Premier of Ontario, the Attorney General of Ontario, the Attorney General of Canada, and a number of police chiefs, because what they're doing is illegal. They cannot limit people's freedoms of movement. They cannot limit people's freedoms of association. They cannot limit people's freedom of speech, which is what the government of Canada is trying to do now as well. So we're being attacked on many different fronts, and it's alarming to us who are in this organization.
Rob, you're just amazing, man. I'm so glad to meet you this first time, and you and I got to stay in touch, and I'd love to have you back at some point to maybe talk even off the just to get your opinion, because you're very educated about this and your experience is so invaluable to me. I've been something about this rubbed me the wrong way right from day one. I've been doing this kind of research, geopolitics and all this, for many, many years. I've developed contacts around the world, and as we were all just sort of getting a grip on what was going down, something struck me the wrong way. And I've been trying to do my best to cover this as an alternative media, you know, citizen journalist. And I had a pretty decent following on my YouTube channel, which I've had since 2008. It was after I got a few strikes that were associated with, one was for cyberbullying because I interviewed a doctor. One was, and two of them were for medical misinformation. So all three were due to me covering this pandemic and covering it with experts. It wasn't even just for my own thoughts that I'm sharing. And the last one, I interviewed Dr. Carrie Madej, and that one just destroyed my channel. And now we're on these alternative platforms because, again, someone at Google has been given the authority, apparently, to stifle this debate and this discussion. And all I've ever tried to advocate for, as I'm sure you would as well, is nobody has to agree with my particular take on things. I'm just trying to get the evidence. I just want to know the truth. But if we can't even have a proper dialogue in this country and we're being divided down the middle, oh, do you like the masks and the lockdowns and the vaccines, or do you not? You know, they're dividing us as a country. And it's like, where have we seen this before, right? But I just want to know the truth. And if we can't have a conversation, that's the end. It goes from words to blows. And I don't want to see that. I know you don't want to see that. Nobody really wants that, but they're trying to make it look like anybody that's resisting this and questioning it is some kind of a violent extremist, or they're whatever. They're trying to classify them in these different categories. Let's just put it at that, which is, to me, it's just despicable. And the fact that the government and the media are all sort of going along with this, you start to wonder who writes the script. And I don't want to get you to speculate on it. Let's maybe, just because we got a few minutes left, let's talk a little bit about the case. You've got this case. I think you're working with Rocco Galati and the Justice Center. I've interviewed Rocco. He's fantastic. And Godspeed to him and Reiner Fulmich and all these other lawyers and whatnot. There seems to be like a call to the Avengers of the world to come out and fight this, right? But how many officers are involved in that that legal case? And then where is the case right now? Like, are we close or is it coming? What's going on with that?
So on the actual, the number of officers who have filed affidavits in relation to the filing of the court case is 19. there are 19 officers. Police on Guard as an organization pretty much starts where the officers who are involved in the court filing begin. But to date, we have, I can't give you the exact number, but it's in the many hundreds of officers who are signed on to Police on Guard. And those are the officers who are signed on to Police on Guard in the forefront publicly. We have way more in the background that are in the shadows, so to speak, involved. Mm-hmm. They're basically not signed up with Police on Guard, but they're part of our organization. They are contributing to our organization. A lot of information that we're getting comes from these officers. So it's, you know, in terms of intelligence, it's an excellent organization. Now, I don't want to put anybody in a hot water by saying that we don't have any information that we shouldn't have shared. A lot of this is public information. No officer that I'm aware of is breaching any confidentiality requirements of their office. That's not the information we're talking about. The information we're talking about is all in the public. It's all in the open about the sanctity of people's rights and the importance of maintaining those rights. That's what the police are supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be maintaining and protecting our rights. So where the case is right now has been filed. We're waiting for a date for a hearing. And as far as that goes, that's all I know about the actual case. What I can tell you is there are expert witnesses that are being provided to talk about masking and its ineffectiveness, the fault of the PCR test being used as a determining factor on cases, whether they should be increased or decreased or how many cases there are. It's the worst possible case count. It's totally fallible. Imagine you took you were arrested for impaired driving and the test that the officer gave you was completely subjective on what the officer wanted the outcome to be. Well, that's pretty much the PCR test. It's whatever the government wants it to be based on the number of cycles that they're issuing. And as it turns out, I actually met someone who's in the labs doing these cycles, and they admitted, yeah, sometimes we're up to 45, 47 cycles. Well, we know the PCR test is invalid after, I think it's 23 cycles, 20 or 23 or even 24 or something, but they're in the 40 plus range, 45 plus range. So we know that when we talk about these increased cases, we have to question, what is the real motivation going on here? This is the alarming part. And I guess, you know, I know we talked about having about 45 minutes. I'm good to go for an hour. If you're good to go for an hour,
stay as long as you want, Rob.
Perfect. I can't say much more than an hour, I can say up to an hour, but sure. I just think, you know, a lot of this information is not getting out there. We need the public to be informed. We need the public to be aware. Yes. And I think the biggest damage, aside from all these medical issues that are being created, I think the biggest damage right now that we're seeing is the credibility of our own government. Like politicians not telling the truth or the honest lawyer. I mean, these have been kind of punchlines and jokes for many, many years, but now we're seeing it at a brand new level, like a terrible new level. And even recently, I just saw a post today, Premier Scott Moe, he's talking about people not taking vaccinations as being the biggest stumbling block to reopening. Now, shouldn't the measurement
be alarming? Yeah,
it is. Shouldn't the measurement be death counts down? Shouldn't the measurement be the safety of citizens? Especially when we're not even talking about a vaccine. We're talking about an experimental vaccine authorized for emergency use. That's the only reason it can be deployed. It hasn't been tested. There is no data on what's going to happen to you. We do know there are a lot of stories, and like I said, I'm not a doctor, so I can't comment on them. I wouldn't feel comfortable in this role talking about them, but there's a lot of questions that people should be asking, and because there seems to be a lot of adverse effects, and I'll just leave it at that. The doctors can speak about that piece because many have, and that's
where I can validate that, Rob. I know people personally that have family members that are in the hospital or have passed or have had heart attacks or blood clot. Like this people are sending me this from all over. It's really alarming. And I would say, I remember the slogan at the beginning of this that came, I'm not sure which politician, but it was sort of one of those marketing slogans they were using was, even if we can stop one death, all this is worth it. If we could save just one life, it's all worth it. And I think, well, where did that highfalutin, you know, pie in the sky idea go when they rolled out this? The lockdowns alone caused all kinds of death and destruction to people's lives, the suicides, the overdoses, the loss of, you know, just it's unbelievable what's happened. And now they're rolling this out as another measure that is already causing literally record numbers of cases of injuries and deaths. If you just go to VAERS and many other sources around the world that are collecting this data and showing people that just in the first few months of the rollout, it's already the record-breaking, damaging vaccine that's out there. So for that to happen, I go, well, what happened to that slogan of if it could only save one life? What if this vaccine kills just one person, which it's killed more than that already? Does that mean I get a choice now? Do I get other options as a citizen to say, I want to go with some of these therapeutics and these other measures that these doctors and experts are recommending and showing really good results with? I should have a choice as to what to do with my body and my health and the health of my family. But now we're being pigeonholed, as you said, into the situation where only the lockdowns, only the masking, only the vaccines are acceptable behavior as a citizen. And if you don't like that, you're a traitor, you're a whatever, you're a denier, and you are the reason why we can't open up. They're trying to weaponize the public against each other. And it's so obvious. And I guess I don't like speculating. I've done my due research. I've got my suspicions. But I would say what to the police out there, to the people watching this, what if we actually are under some kind of an attack right now? It definitely feels that way. I'm not trying to put any kind of theories or whatever out there or be paranoid, but all the signs to me are indicating that something is really wrong behind the doors of government. The fact that there's organizations like you and police that have to come out and risk their lives to defend the charter and the oath that they took tells me there is something wrong. It does my heart good to know that you guys exist and there's so many joining this fight. But at the same time, it's quite alarming, this information, when you put it all together and realize our country's at stake, our future's at stake, our freedom is at stake. And if I don't have the choice as to what I put in my body and what health measures I personally prefer to utilize for myself, if I don't have that choice anymore, then I won't have other choice. If I don't have the choice to speak freely and interview other doctors and experts about their medical opinion, and I'm getting censored, that means I'm losing that choice as well, which again, just makes me feel like there's something bigger going on here, for lack of a better term.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head once again. From an advertising point of view, I'll take it a step further. I actually worked for a public relations agency for a number of years as well, so I got a firsthand look at public relations work, which is advertising is a part of. Public relations is a little bit different. And let's talk about that for a second. So let's look at what happens. Let's look what happens when someone has a competing point of view of what the political narrative is. If you have a competing point of view from the political narrative, you don't have some government expert that shows up and is willing to debate you on the merits of your discussion. What happens is you are ridiculed. You are tarred and feathered, so to speak, in the digital media. You've never had a chance to defend your position. No one's ever tested your hypotheses or conclusions. They've attacked you personally. And if you want to think about how powerful that is for people who aren't thinking about it, do you have children?
I do. Two beautiful girls, yeah.
How old are your girls?
6 and 9.
Well, then you would have seen this. When your children are very, very young and you give them a boundary, they will not take that boundary and instantly accept it. They will challenge it based on what somebody else does. You tell your child, you have to go to bed at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock. Well, Stacy doesn't have to go to bed at that time. Her dad allows her. The reason children do that is humans innately are a very social civilization. We look to others to model our behavior, to decide what we're going to wear, how we're going to wear our hair. All these different things is based on observations that we make of others. So when other people do things, we follow suit. Now there's people like yourself, clearly, you're not a follower. You are someone who is making up their mind for themselves. You're an independent thinker. Ourselves as well. Us and Police on Guard are like that as well. Yes, we follow orders, or yes, we did. Yes, when I was in the police service, I certainly followed orders. But I questioned everything because, as the Nuremberg Code say, simply following orders is not a defense. And so let's talk about where we're going back with the modeling and the behavior. So if I'm being attacked personally, what does that do? If I'm being ostracized socially, that tends to repel people from what I have to say if they're not thinking about what is really going on. The initial reaction is, oh, Rob Stocky's being tarred and feathered. I don't want to be associated with him right now because I don't want any of those tar and feathers to get onto me by sharing that opinion. So this is why never before in history in Canada has it ever been more necessary to question and critically think about everything you are being told. Right now, I can tell you in the advertising world, there's two types of advertising that are taking place. One of them we're aware of and the other one we're not. The first one is the advertising where we know the product, we know the advertiser, we know what the goals are to consume the product or service that is being advertised. That is the advertising that we've been seeing and we're very, very attuned to. We recognize it. The other form of advertising is insidious. It's the advertising that comes from no advertiser showing their face, but the messages of how we're supposed to behave, on what we're supposed to think. That is a form of advertising. That is a form of advertising for a product or service that we're not quite clear what is being asked of us to consume or how to act. But we know we're being told that if you question this, if you question it, you're a racist. If you demonstrate independent thought, you're a conspiracy theorist. And all of these different labels that are just quick labels to put someone instantly pigeonholes them into something. And like we talked about, humans being a very social animal, other people want to back off. What's happening is it's starting to backfire. It's starting to backfire because if you look at the rallies, they're growing en masse. They're huge. And even in Toronto, I spoke. I didn't think I'd be speaking to 12,000 people in Toronto who were fed up with what Doug Ford is doing. As soon as I mentioned Doug Ford's name, they were booing him. And it's growing. That's so good. And, you know, there is the aspect right now, which we can talk about another time, what to do in politics, because you know, what are our choices? You know, it seems to be the choosing the lesser of the three evils, which you have to wonder, are the people that are pushing this forward, riding every horse in the race and making our choices nothing more than an illusion? But that's a discussion for another day. But getting back to what's happening with our government. So when I was talking about the biggest worry that we have right now is credibility. How do we trust our government? How do we trust what our government says? If all of these things to suppress dialogue, to suppress thought are taking place, how do we have that trust? How do we know what is being said is in our best interest? Are we just numbers that are being used to inject a medical experiment that has not been proven? It's different if, you know, it was a polio vaccine and we had polio and we know polio is safe. We had how many years of this stuff? How many years of data on this? We have lots. But with this right now we're injecting pregnant women, or it's being, not we, professionals are telling us we should be injecting pregnant women. Well, what has thalidomide taught us? And we should be injecting children. Who came up with this? Who's putting their name on this? These are very alarming questions that we should all be asking ourselves. One more point on this. I did an interview with Pastor Artur Pavlovsky. Recently. It's on the Police on Guard website. I'm not sure if you saw the interview.
I have it. I'll link it though for people to watch. Yeah.
Okay. He talks about what it's like to live in a communist country. Pastor Pavlovsky talks about the lack of freedom, the brutality of the police, the inability to exercise any democratic rights and freedoms because you don't have any. And we are being sold by some members of academia, by some politicians, by some university professors, on how benevolent communism and socialism is. It's anything but. All you have to do is look at a history book and dig a little bit. It's not. It's anything but. And so I think for your viewers, I think it's very important to see the interview with Pastor Artur about what he went through. And the reason I suggest this is because Pastor Artur talks about the importance of thinking for yourself, the importance of evaluating the information that's being put in front of you, the importance of not necessarily accepting what is put in front of you without critical thinking, because then you are nothing more than a follower or a tool as opposed to someone who's autonomous and able to make their own decisions.
Oh, really well summed up, Rob. I couldn't agree more. I have personal friends that fled places like Romania, Poland, China, who are all just there beside themselves. They are stunned by, because they came here to this country to flee that kind of draconian control over their lives. They came here to live free. And now they're like, all the, what the problem is that people only study the events of history. They don't study the events that happen before the events of history, right? The preceding events. And that's where the real stuff is because it's not like what happened in Germany or Russia or under Mao Zedong, who, you know, Pierre Elliott Trudeau is super cozy with. You know, all these other regimes, Idi Amin in Africa, et cetera, Pol Pot. It didn't just happen overnight. It was little events, bit by bit, that happened that led up to it. And then what they do is they divide the population, weaponize them against each other. And through that division, they come in as the control force that says, okay, we're going to take over now. We got control of the means of production. We can't have free speech and firearm rights and property rights because you guys clearly can't manage yourself. So we're going to come in and take it for you. And then freedom is dead. And then the, you know, history keeps unfolding again and again. I'm actually going to be having Thomas Drago on my show on Wednesday. He was on the Jocko Willmick podcast recently. It got over a million views, and he's a Marine. He was a U.S. Marine, but he grew up in Poland and went to, he lived there under communism and went to a communist prison. And we're going to really be drilling that point home on Wednesday, just to let people know what they're not really being educated about in schools these days. And we're not being educated in the media. And this conversation isn't happening in the wider population. It's happening with people like us, but it's not happening in the wider population. So my goal with these shows and with interviews with people such as yourself is to get the information about the pandemic and everything else out there and the legal actions, but also the bigger picture of, you know, what we really have to be concerned about with within the borders of our country and everybody else in the world, wherever they are, have to look at this as well, because it seems to be that all these policies of incrementally reducing freedoms under the guise of a threat is happening systematically around the world. And we have to, like you said, we really have to have the conversation. And when the government doesn't even want you to have that conversation, to me, that's just nothing but red flags going off for me. Rob, there's so many areas we could go into. You're just a wealth of information, and I'm so happy to talk to you about this. But what would you say would be some closing words you would give to people that are concerned right now, citizens that are concerned? They're interfacing with police. They're being, you know, given fines and tickets. They don't know, they're trying to argue their rights, but it doesn't seem to be working out. If you're approached by a police officer that's enforcing these guidelines, is it better to dialogue with them, or is it better to just accept the ticket and try to move to a court action and work with the Justice Center or something like that? What's your advice with citizens interacting with police officers that are enforcing these guidelines?
Another brilliant question you have, and I'm glad you brought it up because that's exactly what I'm here to talk about. Let me put it this way. I'll tell you a little story. I talked earlier in the interview about Zach. I didn't really tell his story, but I'm going to tell you a story now. Zach is a gym owner who is in Ottawa, opened up a gym, believed everything that the government was telling him, just like I did at the very beginning, and saw that, you know what, there seems to be more to this. So he opened up his gym. He said, people have a right to health. People have a right to shed their anxiety. And my gym provides that. And we'll get through the pandemic. There are no cases that have been associated to going to a gym, as far as I know. So Zach opened up. Zach received numerous fines. He received numerous summonses. He even received a letter from the medical officer of health in Ottawa saying that he could be responsible for deaths. I don't know exactly what's in there. These are his words. So whatever the medical officer of health put in there, but it was a very, very guilt-ridden message that he's contributing to the problem, is the way this letter was written. To date, all of his charges have been thrown out. Have I talked about this? I'm sorry, because I've talked about this numerous times on numerous.
No, I didn't hear the full story. So yeah, it's good to hear that they were all thrown out.
So all of his charges were thrown out except one. And as you know, right now there's not in-person conversations. It's all over the phone. So many times when his counsel phoned to find out the status of his tickets, he was never apprised of it, but they were mysteriously either never filed or misnumbered or withdrawn. Every single one. There's one summons that's outstanding right now. And a summons means you actually have to come to court. You can't just pay the ticket. There is no fine to pay. You actually have to come to court. So he received a summons. You can attend court through your counsel. You can attend court through your agent. You can do that. So he wants to have his counsel attend on his behalf. And his counsel is getting information or getting the words of, now remember, human speech has a portion of words. It also has cadence, inflection, and tone. And so even though you can't see the person, and obviously our body language, but even though he couldn't see the person on the phone, the prosecutor on the phone, the prosecutor is telling him, just so you know, just check with us before your court date comes up, just to be sure that it's still going ahead. So she never really told him that it's going to be withdrawn, but all his other charges were either never filed, withdrawn, or somehow disposed of before he ever went to court. And now this is what's happening here. So what I'm trying to tell you is, if you're someone who is doing what you're allowed to do, which is associate in public, go shopping where you want. We can also talk about masks, by the way. And I would like to talk to you about the Ontario Human Rights Code. And that's a really good one for the people to know. So right now, he's basically at that point right now where it's looking like his fine is going to be thrown out. So how do you deal with the police? If the police come up to you, the worst thing you can do is be rude, is to be insulting. That's not going to get you anywhere. It's the worst thing you can do. Police officers have a job to do. They should be exercising discretion. A lot are, I can tell you right now, a lot are. There's so many ways I can go on this, but in certain jurisdictions, the chief has been putting together these hit squads for people to go, for officers to go out and charge. There are officers in these hit squads that aren't charging. They join these hit squads. They're like, I'm not charging anybody. I'm going in there to protect the public. Now, obviously, if there's an offense that they have to respond to, sure they will. But, you know, just to go out and charge a person who's shopping or who's having a beer with a neighbor, which is a normal human thing, when the government can't provide evidence that this is actually a deadly thing to do, I mean, that's what we're looking at here. So if you're charged by an officer, accept the charge. Don't be silly. Don't try to not accept it. It's a valid document. You have to accept it. The officer is giving you something. If you don't accept it, the officer will just write, refuse service. If you refuse service, you have no control. You don't know the number of the provincial offenses notice. You don't know the date of the summons, and you will be found guilty in absentia. That's how you'll be found guilty. If you don't show up to court and there is no defense argument, well, what happens? Just the prosecution gets to speak and the prosecution will win. They will put together what's called a prima facie case, and there is no answer, so you'll be convicted. Now, if you show up to court, if you have counsel, that's a different story. Be polite with the police officer, but fight the charges because they're illegal. And that's part of the court action with police on guard. We filed that for clarity. We filed that action for clarity. How can the police be exercising these rights and charging people with these offenses when they're illegal, according to the charter?
Yeah. And if that goes through, then that could then be a legal precedent that's set moving forward for others that could, you could reference that. Is that kind of the goal, is to try to get some of these precedents in there?
That is, but to, you know, but the precedents have already been set already. This is something new because this is, you know, the guise of the pandemic. So we're seeking clarity on this case, but the government will have to provide evidence to demonstrate that this is the scientific and medical evidence to back up our position. You can't just arbitrarily put in a law that breaches the substance of the charter and not expect the courts to raise an eyebrow, because they will. And that's why we're putting this argument forward, is because we want that eyebrow to be raised. We need that forum for that eyebrow to be raised and to test what is happening, because it's illegal. Now, I want you to remember, and I want your viewers to remember, because you don't know me, you don't know what I'm all about. I'm not about putting people recklessly in harm's way. I mean, there's a give and take here. If there is some serious issue, if there is some serious pandemic that is killing people en masse, and we need to take action, why isn't the government showing us the stats? Why isn't the government showing us the scientific evidence to back it up? Why is the government muzzling doctors who are providing alternative methods to treat? There's no doubt there's an illness going on. There's no doubt there's some sort of virus out there. But many doctors have come forward and said, yeah, we can treat it with this, with hydroxychloroquine. We can treat it with ivermectin. As a matter of fact, in India right now, India has just served one of the medical officers in the WHO with court papers to appear. And I understand charges. I don't know the whole details. It's brand new. It's breaking. But this doctor is now under suspicion for not putting information forward that could have saved many lives and instead followed a specific narrative. I'm not sure if you heard about that case about India.
I didn't hear about that case, but that's amazing to me because I've always been thinking about this. If they've been holding back on these other therapeutics, like you said, HCQ, budesonide, ivermectin, vitamin D, Z, zinc, all this stuff. If they've been putting that out there or haven't been putting it out there and have actually been censoring people on Facebook or YouTube or whatever, like people, if I was on YouTube right now, I wouldn't even be able to say those words. That's how bad it is, right? But if that's been happening, and then now we know that there actually is a lot of science to back up the fact that this is helping save lives and it is helping mitigate these diseases, then that means that they're in gross incompetence to the point of you could even say criminal negligence or something like that, because people are dying as the result of not being given access to the full bandwidth of information and they're being pigeonholed into accepting something that does have deadly side effects. You know what I mean?
I 100% agree. And if I was, I'll tell you right now, police officers lay charges, right? So police officers have to be aware of the law. They have to be aware of procedure. They have to be aware of the elements of culpability, the facts and issue in a case before laying a charge. So if I was to be an officer who had the power to lay the charges for a doctor who is behaving, as we've just described, holding back information that could have saved lives and instead pushing a specific narrative, first, we'd have to find out what is the motivation to do that. Is this person being paid off or not? We don't know, but that would be a question. What is the motive? And second of all, if we were to establish that motive, I would certainly be laying a charge. I'd be certainly laying that charge because it's serious. People are not getting the information they need to make choices for their own health. They're getting one side of the story. And psychologically, there is a saying that what you see is all there is. That's how our minds work. If we're not allowed to see the other side of the coin, then we make our decision based on the information we have.
That's right.
That that's the information we have.
Yeah, that plays into what you're talking about, the media. I did a lot of studying of people like Edward Bernays and whatnot, and the idea of what he called the public mind, which is what you were referencing earlier, and how, or you get into like Gustave Le Bon. He wrote a book back in the day called The Crowd, which was a study of the popular mind. And when you get into that study, those dynamics of how behavior can be influenced by either restricting information or providing false information or a combination of both. And when you do it en masse, which is through the media, then you can change the direction of society any way you wish. I mean, this is what Goebbels was all about in Germany, et cetera. They all said it, you know, make the lie big, keep repeating it. Eventually people believe it. If we're actually in that situation now, which I mean, many people in Canada are still oblivious to what's going on, then who's culpable in this? Like, we've got the politicians, of course. Many could be either paid off, blackmailed, or just deceived, one of those things. Then we have the people enforcing it, right, from the bylaw officers and the police and everybody else, to the media who's broadcasting this message. If something like this ever comes out, there are a lot of people that are going to have to stand some kind of trial, which is why I don't know how familiar you are with Reiner Fulmich and the case that he's trying to pursue at an international level.
Yeah.
Okay. Is he tied? Do you know if he's tied at all to the case going on with India and the WHO? Or is that something separate?
That is something I do not know, but I have no doubt that the efforts of Reiner Fulmich had opened up a lot of eyes and had people ask questions. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were somewhat related, but I don't believe that the lawyers who are making the summons are directly related to Reiner Fulmich's case.
Right. Yeah, no, we don't know, but it is good to see. And that's what I hope to do with this is just put another video out there of a call to action for anybody that's watching in any of these services, whether you're a citizen or you work in the health services or the police services or the government, to be on the right side of history. There are hundreds of millions of people around the world that want their freedom back. And it's not, you know, we don't want to do things in a way that breaches law. We're trying to do this lawfully. We're trying to do this peacefully. And, but at the same time, it's quite alarming that we're in a position where we're forced to be at war with our fellow citizens, to not trust our government, to not trust our police. It's a horrible position that we've been put in, and we need to work to find the truth about this. And we've been told, Rob, we've been told this whole year, trust the science, trust the science. I found it interesting that they would say, trust the science, not just trust science. Because when you trust science, you trust the method of, forming a hypothesis and weighing evidence against it. And if you don't have two sides to that, then you're dealing with a dictatorship, and we need to move away from that. So I just want to put my voice in there for what it's worth, as just a dad, a form. I'm still an entrepreneur, but I've had to definitely move things around this past year. But as a person, just a human being that loves freedom, truth, and justice, we need more people to come to this fight. We need more voices to this. We need people to go and support your organization and other organizations like it. And we need these efforts to be seen around the world, because we need to see closure to this. We can't continue going down this path, because it's just going to keep going, as we're seeing. I remember I was having debates with friends. They're like, oh, Dave, it's just going to be another 2 weeks. Oh, they'll let us out by Thanksgiving. Oh, don't worry, you'll have your Christmas. Oh, now it's Easter. Oh, it's just, we're just going to have to cancel some camping and seeing your family. And you're just like, well, here we are. And now they're again saying, oh, we're going to go till December. And you're like, don't you get it? After this, it's going to be climate lockdowns. It's going to be, now there's space aliens. Who knows, right? Either way, we have to stop it now, and we have to get together and keep this conversation going on. So, Rob, this has been so incredible. It's actually really put me in a really good mood today to know that people like you are out there, and I know people listening are out there. I'm seeing you in the comments. How can people support your organization and your efforts right now?
You know what? This is probably a great topic to sign off on, and let me get into it. First of all, I encourage everyone, if you have questions, if you are, you know, that spidey sense is tingling that something isn't right, you have to take action. Canada is a country where our soldiers spent many gallons of blood fighting for us and our freedoms. And I personally believe, well, that's why I'm part of Police on Guard, is those freedoms are being compromised today. And we've had the luxury of growing up or being born into and growing up in a society where those rights were already there. But now we're in a situation where people have to stand up and say, we want to keep these rights. That this is not acceptable. Come out to the marches. Come out to the demonstrations. Don't be afraid of arrest. I'm not afraid of arrest. If I get arrested, fine, arrest me. I'm not going to resist, but I will fight the charges. And I'll just say I'll fight the charges. Every member of Police on Guard has been going to, most members of Police on Guard have been going to demonstrations. They've been speaking. Good. They know that they could be arrested. And these are former police officers, and they're willing to take that, because we're not going to be deterred from our goal. We will set the example. We will set the standard, and we're encouraging everybody, be peaceful. Don't be rude. The police are our friends. The majority of police, I'm telling you right now, do not agree with what is going on. The majority of police who are serving right now are not glued to the boob tube, consuming propaganda, thinking that this is all fine and dandy. The majority are not. There are some that are, but the majority are not. So don't be afraid to go to demonstrations. And as a matter of fact, the majority of police have been stellar at demonstrations. They've assisted us with keeping the peace. They've assisted us with safety. They've blocked off roads for us. They've been fantastic. And it's peaceful protest. The charter allows us to do this. We're not breaching any laws. And to date, nobody has died in any of these protests. So I encourage people, get involved, start doing your research. Not everything out there is legitimate. Some of it is illegitimate. And one more thing I'll say about protesting, there's a word that you have to understand, and it's subversion. There will be elements, we're starting to see this now, where the contrary argument is inserting themselves, pretending to be an ally of ours, and then creating a ruckus in our presentations. Be aware of
seeing this now, eh? Yeah.
We saw this last weekend in Ottawa, where people who started off being part of the protest started creating trouble. The whole operations MO of these people is to bring discredit on the peaceful nature of our protests. With the 12,000, which was probably 30,000 in Toronto, not a single window was broken, not a single wall was spray painted, not a single ball bearing was fired out of a slingshot to harm somebody. None of these things have happened. These are peaceful people. The people that attend these protests are doctors, medical practitioners, lawyers, police officers, serving and retired, school teachers, business owners. These are upstanding people of society who have said, I'm recognizing that something isn't right here. I'm recognizing that I have to do something, so I'm coming out. These people that are creating a ruckus in these demonstrations, those are not our movement. Those are not the people that we're associating with. So please come out to the demonstrations, go on to our website, listen to this gentleman's podcast, I mean, the guy's got a good head on his shoulders. I mean, this is what you have to do. If you want to enjoy your rights, you better stand up for them.
Oh, bravo. I'm right there. You gave me goosebumps there. And this is, I'm with you. Anything we can do. And I just want to extend my hand. I'm an ally with you guys. Anything at all that I can do, I'm here. If you're a police officer out there right now that's listening to this and you don't have the ability to speak out, I totally understand. Use me. I'll speak for you. That's my job. We need to rebuild the media in this country. The people need to take that power back. We are the media. We need to get this information out as far and as wide as we can. And we need to save this country from the tyranny that we're heading towards. So, Rob, I just want to thank you. I want to thank Wendy, the team over there. You guys are doing an amazing job. You're not alone. I can't wait to see this grow and flourish. And I want to see our country come back better than ever before. I want to see freedom reign. And that's why I'm here. So thank you for spending this time, for giving us this information. It gives me a lot of hope. It's giving a lot of people listening now. I can see that they're loving it. So thanks, Rob. And let's do it again sometime, brother.
Would love to. Anytime. Give me a call.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I'll let you go and then I'll sign off with everybody here. So thank you, Rob. We'll see you later. And wow, that is just absolutely incredible. Better than I could have expected. And I want to thank the people that got that hooked up for me. This is important. I'm going to keep bringing some of these people on the show anytime they want to come on. We got to keep having these forums. What I'm going to do now, I'm going to sign off on this live stream. But I've been doing something really cool on my Telegram channel where I've been trying to interact more with you, the people that listen to this show, the people that are engaged in this conversation. And so if you jump over onto my Telegram channel, you can find me at DW Truthwear on Telegram. If you get lost, go to my website, dwtruthwear.com. You'll notice that there is a link tree right there on the right-hand side. All my links are there. You can find my Telegram. Go over there and I'm going to do a live voice chat where I can just kind of hang out with you guys, take your questions. And anybody that wants to jump in there, you're more than welcome. So go and check that out. And we'll probably be starting that in about 15 minutes. But just some closing thoughts is I've been talking about this stuff for many, many months. It's almost gotten to the point where I don't know what else I can say. I don't know whether information I can put out there, but I'm doing the best I can to bring in that information to you. And that's why I love having these kinds of guests come on that can support it with where they're coming from. And I'm going to continue to do that on this show. So if any of you listening right now could do me a huge favor and please share this link out, whatever favorite platform that you like, I've got this on Twitch, Rockfin, DLive, and Foxhole right now. As soon as we're done, I'll be uploading it to Podbean and iTunes if you just like the audio versions. I also put this up on Rumble and BitChute, and all those links you can find on my website. And do us a solid and share this out. Share this website out. No matter where you are in the world, share this website out because I think they're setting a really good example of what can be done no matter where you are in the world right now to take action and to be a part of this. And I encourage you all to just keep fighting this fight. Never give up. You're not alone. And let's battle this tyranny and this misinformation together. So I'm going to close it off. Thanks again to everybody. And in about 15 minutes, go and join me over on my Telegram channel and let's talk. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll catch you next time. Cheers.